All right, welcome back everyone to the Deep Dive. Today we're going deep into a case that's really pivotal when it comes to this whole area of how the legal system figures out if things are, fair, especially when you're talking about the police, identifying a suspect.
Oh, yeah.
And it's United States ex rel. Rutherford v. Deegan. It's a 1969 case, and it really gets into some of the core ideas that we still grapple with today. So we're going to unpack that.
Really foundational stuff.
We're gonna see why it still matters so much.
We've really dug deep into all the details here,
Right.
the who, what, when, why of this whole case. And what we really want to do is pull out those key principles so you can see, not just what happened, but how it kind of fits into this bigger picture, especially, before Roe v. Wade, before the Supreme Court's Wade decision,
Yeah.
back when the Due Process Clause was the main thing everyone was looking at for, these identification challenges.
Okay, so let's just get right into it, right? So the full name of the case, are you ready for this?
Give me.
United States of America ex rel. Percy Rutherford versus John T. Deegan, Warden of Sing Sing Prison.
Wow.
Second Circuit Court of Appeals, 1969.
It's a mouthful.
Now, this wasn't a trial, right? This was what's called a habeas corpus appeal. So Rutherford had already been convicted at this point. It's basically saying, hey, hold on a second. Me being locked up, this isn't right.
Right.
So the big question the court has to figure out here is, was this police station show up? That's where they, show a witness, just one suspect. Was that okay in this case? Constitutionally okay.
And what's interesting to me as we kind of go through this deep dive, we have to think about like the actual, robbery that kind of set all of this in motion.
Yeah.
So picture this. It's 1965, broad daylight, and this woman, Mrs. Marjorie Donnelly, she's just at work, and suddenly two guys, no masks or anything, just walk right in and rob the place. Just
Bold as can be.
I know, right? And the whole thing, it's over in like 5 minutes. Now, that might not seem like a lot of time, but what Mrs. Donnelly does during those 5 minutes, that's super important to how the court ends up deciding this case.
It's all about the details. So Mrs. Donnelly, she's not just, sitting there passively. She's really, really focused on the robber's face. Like she's actively trying to memorize his features, like you're trying to remember something for a test or something.
Oh, totally.
She knows that if she wants to help catch this guy later, she needs to remember everything she can. And after the robbery, she gives the police this super detailed description. So 11 days later, things get interesting.
11 days later, the police, they do what's called a show up. Now, this is where things get a little, potentially problematic. They bring Mrs. Donnelly in and they present her with just one guy, Cosey Rutherford, who's already in custody.
So he's like already in handcuffs, probably.
Right, exactly. And you can kind of see, even without knowing a ton about the law, how this could be suggestive, right? You're showing someone just one person.
It's kind of like, is this the guy?
Yeah. They could
Okay.
totally influence the witness,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we got to remember the timeline here, right? This is all happening before the Roe v. Wade decision, that big Supreme Court case in 67 that set the rules about how these identifications should happen.
Right.
So back then in 65, the way they figured out if things were fair was by looking at the Due Process Clause in the Constitution. And there's this other case, Stovall v. Deno, that basically gave them this totality of the circumstances test. So in Rutherford, the Second Circuit, they had to figure out, was the show up so impermissibly suggestive that it basically created a very substantial likelihood of irreparable misidentification?
So basically, it was the way they did this show up so bad, so suggestive, that it pretty much guaranteed she was going to get it wrong.
Yeah, like was it a setup? So they
Exactly.
really had to scrutinize everything that happened.
Totally.
All right.
And the court, they didn't just automatically throw out the show up because it was a one-on-one. They didn't just say, oh, that's always bad. Instead, they went through this really careful process, looking at all the different factors, all the circumstances, They said, okay, yeah, show ups can be suggestive. But let's look at whether her identification, Mrs. Donnelly's identification, was actually reliable.
So it's like a balancing act, right?
Exactly.
So what were some of the things that made them think her identification was reliable?
Well, first off, she had a good long look at the robbers, right? It's not like it was dark or anything.
Right, broad daylight.
Broad daylight, 5 whole minutes, and no masks.
Nothing covering their faces.
So she had a clear view.
Yeah, it wasn't like a quick glance either.
Right. And that's the other thing. The court was really impressed with how focused she was. Remember, she wasn't just there, she was actively trying to memorize his face. That makes a big difference.
It shows intent.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Like she was determined to remember.
And then there's her initial description to the police. Even though by the time they did the show up, Rutherford had like shaved and changed clothes, her description still matched him pretty well.
Yeah, like his basic features.
So even though he tried to change his appearance, her memory, it seems like it was based on something real, you know.
Right, it wasn't just made up.
And then when they did the show up, she identified him immediately. No hesitation, no doubt.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, a witness being sure doesn't always mean they're right.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But in this case, the court, they saw it as another piece of evidence that maybe, just maybe, she was onto something.
Another point for reliability.
Yeah, and then there's the time frame. Only 11 days passed between the robbery and the show up. Not a super long time.
So her memory was probably still pretty fresh.
Exactly. So they took all of that, the good look she had, her focus, the accurate description, the quick and sure identification, the short time frame, and they said, okay, in this case, it seems like the good stuff, the things that point to her being reliable, they outweigh the fact that a show up can be suggestive.
Right. The scales tip towards reliability.
And there's this great quote from Judge Medina's opinion where he talks about Mrs. Donnelly's, quote, deliberate attempt to study the robber's face.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
He really emphasizes that, you know, she wasn't just glancing. She was making an effort to remember.
Yeah. It was intentional.
And the court, they also made it clear that they're not going to have these rigid rules about what makes an identification bad. Like, they're not going to say show-ups are always unconstitutional.
No bright lines here.
They're going to look at each case, all the details, the whole context, to see if the identification makes sense.
Every case is different.
Now, for all our law students out there understanding this case, it has some pretty big implications for, you know, how you wrap your heads around criminal procedure.
Oh, absolutely. This is like a key part of understanding how the law about identifications has changed over time.
It's a building block.
Right. And remember, we talked about how this all happened before Roe v. Wade, that big Supreme Court case in 1967.
Right.
Well, Roe v. Wade said that you have the right to a lawyer during lineups. But that rule, it wasn't retroactive, meaning it didn't apply to cases that happened before 1967, like Rutherford.
So this case, it's still super relevant for cases that happened in that era, you know, pre-Wade.
Exactly. So for all those pre-Wade cases, that Stovall test, you know, the totality of the circumstances, that's the standard. That's how courts figure out if an identification was fair or not.
So even if a procedure seems iffy at first glance, like a show-up, it might still be okay if there's really good evidence that the witness's identification, you know, was on point based on their own memory, not because the police were pushing them in a certain direction.
It's about whether the identification itself was reliable, not just the method they used.
Right. The big takeaway here is that it's not just about the procedure itself. It's about whether that specific procedure in that specific case created a really high chance of a wrong identification.
And that's what the courts have to figure out.
Exactly. So, you know, to wrap up our deep dive into Rutherford, this case really shows how courts had to walk this fine line back in the day before Roe v. Wade. They had to balance the fact that some procedures, like show-ups, can be super suggestive with the fact that sometimes, even with those procedures, the witness might still have a really solid memory. And it leads to this really interesting question that I think is relevant for law students, but also anyone who's interested in, you know, the legal system. How do these principles from Rutherford, how do they still matter today? You know, how do we think about due process? How do we think about whether eyewitness testimony is reliable, especially now when we have all these new ways of identifying people? It makes you think about, you know, how do we make sure that people get a fair trial, but also that we're actually catching the right people? It's a tough balance.
It's a really important question. Even with all the advances we've made, that basic tension between fairness and accuracy, it's still there.
Still at the heart of it all. Well, on that note, I think that's a good place to wrap things up for today.
Yeah, I think so too.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.
Yeah, this was a great discussion.
And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.